That's the wonderful dulcet tones of one Lou Donaldson. Ask any old timer, they'll tell you who he is. He was a guy who is credited with bridging the gap between soul and jazz. He played both as an alto saxophonist or saxophonist for many, many years. Lou Donaldson. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and we pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. Well, let's start off with a little note here. The President of the United States is at the United Nations today, vowing that his term will be characterized by what he called relentless international communication, relentless diplomacy. Now, I don't know what that particularly means. He didn't say to what aim. Of course, the aim of any diplomacy, the way he is referring to it, is to bring countries together, but he is saying it with a particular emphasis, as if to say that the United States had a rotten history of alienating its other countries at the United Nations, and he is going to go in the opposite direction of engaging with other countries. Well, that's all well and good. We'll see where that goes. But we still have to recognize that it was a welcome statement. But that does not expiate the demons that he is showing right now. He may want to come to other nations at the table at the United Nations to work things out, but it doesn't look like he's working things out right now, deporting tens of thousands of people, deporting them from a country that isn't his own. He's deporting them back to Haiti. They fled Haiti, as you know, because of the untenable conditions under which Haitians had to live. Politically, that was one thing. But then, of course, we know everything was compounded by Mother Nature. We had storms, we had earthquake, and people really, really were taken to the limit in the way of suffering. And they still are suffering. And he's not going to the table on that. So all those nice words that he said this morning mean nothing. This should be a high priority item. You want to talk about diplomacy. You want to talk about how, as a member of the world community of nations, in fact, a leader of the world community of nations, the United States, under Joe Biden, is committed to setting a different tone. It isn't a different tone at all. So all that nice talk this morning means nothing to me. Nothing. There ought to have been by now a summit meeting with Biden. If he didn't want to do it, he could. He has any number of people in his administration who could lead those talks in order to get some kind of cogent, logical response. We have tens of thousands of people living under a bridge. They have fled, presuming that they are fleeing to safety. They cannot contain the anger. They cannot live like this much longer. And the United States says nothing. It unleashes, in fact, its security, border security and border police, which compounds the problem now. And here we have the exact opposite of the sentiment being expressed by the president himself, that he's committed to relentless diplomacy. Is he having a moment, a senior moment? Does it slip his mind that he has the perfect opportunity now to kickstart that operation of relentless diplomacy and to respond appropriately as a leading nation of the world? But that's just talk. He's just having a moment. Until we see concrete responses that suggest somebody in his administration has a bit of logic, has a bit of a heart, knows international law and what this country is supposed to do in observance of it, he might as well just shut up. That's my comment for the day on Joe Biden. I'm sick of it. And our job, all of us, is to stand with the people. We are to give voice to their cries for help. We are to do that. All your flowery language about relentless diplomacy. Please, don't make me laugh. My lips are chapped. All right. Let's go back to continuing our discussion from yesterday. And you'll find that I do this a lot because some things are so important, even if other things, you know, kind of sideline them for the moment. We can't let them just sit there. We have to deal with them because they're valuable questions to address and to answer. So we have quite a few. At 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, this was composed. I promise you that's the truth. I didn't wait for things to happen. This happened. I put these things down on paper long before it got to this point. But the questions are still relevant, and so are your answers. The first one, as briefly as you can, using only a few words or a phrase, how would you describe the state of the union right now? I'll repeat it. As briefly as you can, using only a few words or a phrase, how would you describe the state of the union right now? Here's the next question. So you have a list and you can choose. As you see it, will things get better or worse? What do you think will be the key indicators? As you see it, will things get better or worse? What will be the key indicators as you see it? Here's another question. Do you feel you're a part of America or apart? APART, one word with two separate words in there, apart from it. Do you feel you are a part of America or apart from it? Please explain. Here's the first one that gets us close to what is happening now. How do you rate President Joe Biden's performance so far? How do you rate President Joe Biden's performance so far? There are more questions, but let's start with these four. Take your choice, but please answer as directly as you can, as substantively as you can, specifically from your point of view. Don't tell me about somebody else's thoughts. Tell me about what you are thinking. And tell me why you come to the conclusions that you've come to. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. As you can tell, it is vitally important, I believe. I've always believed it, so this is nothing new. The people's thinking is important. And we have to give space to that. It's one thing, you know, you have an expert in this and an expert in that, and that's wonderful. I've done that a lot. But I've still come to the conclusion that the more convincing opinion is that of the people answering a question as sincerely as they do. We start off with Carol from Texas. Hello, Carol. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
I'm very happy to speak with you and your audience this afternoon, especially regarding the Haitian situation at the border.
Thank you.
I have a question for you before I even attempt your questions. And that is it correct that the Haitians are being deported without due process and without any opportunity for a vaccination, the COVID vaccination? It's my understanding that that Jen Psaki said yesterday that they weren't being vaccinated in an answer to Yamiche Alcindra, I believe her name is, the journalist. Is this correct?
Oh, I don't know if it is correct, but I've heard similar reports.
That is horrific.
But the question is, get to the question. Is that the question that you wanted answers?
Well, I'm in agreement with all of your points about the lack of humanity that is applied to Haitians or Caribbeans as compared to any other migrants. I mean, if we can amass a flotilla of planes to bring Afghanis to the United States, why can't we in some way deter deportation at the border, the southern border, for fellow Americans? I mean, they're from the same part of the world, for goodness sake. This, to me, is just straight-up discrimination.
The question may be more rudimentary than that. Under what power does the United States assume the right to deport anybody from another nation?
Well, he's trying to outdo his predecessor. Don't forget, President Obama was the deporter in chief. He deported over 1 million people. So maybe
yes,
he wants
but
to
that still doesn't that he was wrong then too.
Yeah, he was wrong. I agree.
Okay, so
but Joe Biden is no angel. Joe Biden, the architect of the crime bill in the 90s, with the cohorts of the Black Caucus, They signed off on that too. And where are they now? The only person I've heard about is Ilhan Omar, who's objected to this treatment.
Well,
I mean, as a mother of three black men, I'm
outraged
by the treatment. You know, showing people with whips on horseback, whipping people like they're animals. This is so against human rights. This is such a violation. And to stand up at the United Nations, I can't even tolerate the sight of the man, much less listen to his voice. A straight up hypocrite.
Well, let's get to the question. The question is, where this is concerned, we have several matters of law that, in my opinion, and of course that doesn't matter, I'm not a legal expert, but I would imagine extensive questions should be asked and answered, especially from legal scholars.
Oh, well, I bow to the scholars. I'm not an attorney, much less a scholar, so.
Does a president have any authority to enter another country and extract people from yet another country and take them back to their original home? Is that permissible under under international law?
Understanding that the Haitians are in the, once they cross the border, once they cross the Rio Grande, they're in the United States. And then they're being rounded up and deported from the United States, not from Mexico.
Right.
So
but there are legal procedures. There are legal procedures that should have declared them as rightful migrants, at least, and that should have protected their rights. Biden says no. Automatically and unilaterally, you're going to go. But let's get to your question that you were going to answer.
Well, if he has the right, because they've been exercising the rights as presidents to protect the southern border or to protect whatever borders, and those unfortunate migrants, once they've been deported or once they've been put on a plane and kicked out of the country.
Are you answering a particular question?
Okay.
And what is it?
Am I answering a particular question?
Yes.
You said that he had the right as a president. Am I misunderstanding your question? You said as a president, does he have a right to deport anybody from another country?
And
that would be a no.
That's not within the list of questions that I asked. I asked four particular questions in a row. Are you answering any of those four?
No, I was answering the question that you just immediately put to me. Does he have the right as the president to deport anybody from another country? And obviously that would be a no.
But we don't know. It ought to be raised.
Well, logically, he cannot deport someone from another country from another country. He can only deport someone from this country, the United States.
But we don't know. We don't know. We don't know the specific provisions of the law. We don't know how the Haitians who are there now, how are they categorized by law? And therefore, under what circumstances can the President of the United States meddle with them in another country? Because where they are
in another country. Once they cross the Rio Grande, they're in the United States. Yes?
Everybody says that. But they still inherit that appellation of they are migrants. It doesn't matter whether they're legal or not. They're migrants. Everybody recognizes that. Does international law also recognize that, is what I'm asking. And we need scholars to talk about that. Because
I defer to the scholars, whether they're migrants or refugees, or expellees, or, you know, tourists. if they once they enter the United States, the president and his minions have the right to
but we
do
don't
as
know
they
what
will,
the law
which
says.
Is what they're doing. They're taking United States citizens and renditioned them, and no one objected to that until after the fact.
Yes, but we don't know. I'm still insisting that we don't know what the law says. And at what point did they are they relieved of that appellation of migrant or immigrant or refugee or whatever it is they assume themselves to be? Can the president unilaterally decide, well, you're not that? In my view,
and by the time they get due process, by the time that question is addressed at the court level, it's too late. You know, for the ones who've been already rendition
no,
and taken
not
out of the country, it's late for them.
Not understanding my point. The point I'm trying to make is this. You have more than 10,000 people crowded under a bridge. They've gathered there by word of mouth and by networking and so forth. Word has passed around that, at least for now, this is a safe place.
And
they have to organize their next steps. Okay. What does the law says? Joe Biden is not the law. He's president, but he's not the law. He cannot unilaterally say, well, this one is a migrant, and that one is a refugee, and that one is a criminal.
And, and on that issue, he has deputized the Border Patrol to, without a judge, to issue so-called due process to the non-status illegal refugees. I mean, they're assigning all sorts of labels to these people, you know, and specifically to the Haitian people.
Black. He does that because
he has the
black,
right to deputize them.
They are deemed helpless, and nobody is defending them. This is how Biden looks at it. So he comes down with all of his might to show an example of how dedicated to law and order he is. Okay, fine. It still doesn't answer the question. What law is he upholding? What law?
It is to reject black faces from the United States. That's what it is. It's not about law or order. It's the same thing as Trump did that said, oh, Haiti is a shithole country, and everybody in Haiti has
AIDS.
So Joe Biden is doing the same thing.
Excuse me. Watch your language. This is a program airing all over the place, and there are laws about use of language on the air by the FCC. You should know that by now.
To your audience, I was just reiterating the facts. And that's what the former president stated about that country. And that's
yes,
what
it
this
doesn't
president
matter. He's wrong. He was wrong when he said it. And
president.
He's wrong now. And you are wrong for repeating it. And don't pass it, Buck. You are responsible for what you say.
That's
and
why
it
I
is not about you quoting
like
somebody who said a word. Come on, let's not play games here. Thanks for calling. Patricia, you're on the air from New York. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank
I want you,
you
to
good
know that
to you.
What Joe Biden just did in deporting human beings back to misery is really a proxy for what he thinks about black people, whether black people want to acknowledge this or not. And so what I did yesterday, Eutrice, is I actually called, as I said I would, I called Joyce Beatty, who is the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. And unfortunately, her poor administrative aide who answered the phone really got an earful from me yesterday. And I would recommend that everybody on this, you know, in this listening call, call Joyce Bedient. If I could give her number, I mean, if you could just permit me to just give out the number, but people can just, please. You know, beg your pardon?
I said, please give out the number.
Okay, the number for Joyce Beatty, who is the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, is 202-225-4324. And I stated the following. I stated, number one, that what Joe Biden did was very Trumpian, and that we would expect that from Trump, but not from someone whose position, the office that he holds, was because black people came out, gave him a pass on the crime bill, and voted for him anyhow. I said that at this point, this what he did was a proxy for how he feels about black people. I said that it's clear that there is no black leadership, and that at this particular point, black people need to understand that they have nowhere to go, not in the Republican Party, not in the Democratic Party, and it's time for black people to really consider a third party. And I ended by saying, come next year, all of the Congressional Black Caucus leadership will be asking me and everybody else I know to vote for the Democrats. And I said to her, I don't care anymore. I said, I'm not going to do it. And please convey that message to Ms. Beatty. And that was my conversation.
It was an excellent, excellent conversation you had. What was her reaction?
She was, first of all, she listened. I have to admit, we were on the phone for about 10 minutes, and she politely listened. She said that she was upset and concerned that I felt that way about black leadership in the Congressional Black Caucus. I told her I hadn't heard a word out of any black leadership, any word out of the Congressional Black Caucus, and that I was absolutely appalled and disgusted and disappointed. I used those adjectives. I also called my local congressman, I'm here in New York, Gerald Nadler, and I also gave his legislative aide an ear. And so my recommendation is that Joyce Beatty specifically, because she's the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, needs to hear from everybody. This should not be a one call, you know, that they can dismiss and minimize as just one person. They need to get an earful from a lot of people, even if it's only the people who listen to lead stories.
I think that's an excellent idea, and we should do it. Just repeat Joyce Beatty's number again so everybody could write it down. I'm writing it down, so I will have it for future reference.
It's 202-225-4324. 202-225-4324. And for those of you who are in New York or wherever you are, where your local legislator is a Democrat, call their office. Give them an earful. But again, I think the message that I said to them was, I don't care about the Democrats anymore. And if a Republican gets in, then I'll just have to take my lumps. But I don't care.
I think they ought to know that. That a lot of people feel that. A lot of people second that motion. Thank you so much.
Well, they'll only hear that if people call in.
Thank you. Yes, we should do that. That is something we certainly can do. All righty. We have...
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Tony, is he there or is he gone?
Tony
from Orlando.
Tony dropped.
Okay, he's gone. 888-874-4888. Is the president to be depended on to relentlessly pursue diplomacy when we see that he has not and has apparently no intention to with respect to more than 10,000 people, including children, including women having children, bringing their babies into the world under a bridge? This is just so unacceptable. It's a crime. It's a crime. And we have you know, the president being all ceremonial about it, and he's being very, you know, law and order. But it is always on black people that they experiment to see whether they're going to gain any political ground with the nonsense that they're doing. We've got to really move on this and let these legislators know. We have to let these legislators know. I've said it on this program. Joe Biden didn't have a prayer until the black vote. He did not have a prayer at becoming president of the United States. And if he's even a cursory student of history, he should know the role of Haiti and Haitians in creating the first genuine state in our neck of the woods, in our hemisphere. Gwen, you're on the air from New York.
Hello, Patrice.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you did a show yesterday and did today. I know there's four questions today, but yesterday's show in particular, because it's so troubling to see what's going on down there. It's like watching the slaves come in, and there's the slave masters on their horses whipping the people.
Yes.
And it's so ironic watching it, and it's really deeply, deeply troubling. And, you know, I told everybody vote for Bernie Sanders, but, you know, nobody wanted to see what I was saying. So the question about being an American today, and how we feel about being an American, could you just give me that again?
Okay, let me look it up. Do you feel you're a part of America or apart from it? Explain.
Okay. I feel kind of apart from America because I feel so frightened in these times talking freely about how I feel. Because specifically when it comes to the issue of not wanting to take this vaccine. And I feel very uncomfortable because it's the progressives that seem to be leading the way here. So I'm standing, you know, in a group of people, like, for example, at a protest where it's like a whole different language and world for me because I on this issue, I agree. It doesn't mean that I'm a Trump supporter. It doesn't mean that I'm anti-abortion. But on this particular issue, I don't think that any government, I don't care if the FDA approves this junk. I don't think you have the right to tell me that I have to take a shot. And I get I'm so despondent when I listen. I've been listening to BAI for years. And you know, because you were on BAI when I used to call there too. Okay. So for years I've been calling. So now, the shows are so censored that for me, when I call, my phone number has literally been taken. Like when I call, it just goes to dead. It doesn't even ring anymore. So, I mean, that's what I got for running for station board, but how I feel so, uncomfortable and betrayed too, is because these are the people that are all supposed to be leading the way to freedom and to not being persecuted, and to certainly never hear somebody say, you know, in a very cavalier way, we'll throw them in jail or make sure they don't have a job anymore. It's really serious stuff that you're saying there. You tell somebody a doctor. I mean, I heard a woman again this morning speaking about how a doctor lost his license. I think it was for prescribing ivermectin for his viewpoint about wearing masks. And the truth is that, you know, I do wear a mask, but they're not particularly that effective. But for me, in my world, I say some is better than none. But I don't think that the man should have lost his license, but he did lose his license. And yet, on the other hand, you have, you have the same liberals complaining that doctors that are doing abortions are going to lose their license. Well, I don't think they should lose their license, and I don't think the other doctors should. But why I feel my world is unrecognizable is because I really can't just go out and freely speak about my opinions, which are, as you know, pretty strong anymore. I'm not with the people that I have been speaking to, because I think they feel like you have a screw loose or something. But, you know, time will tell. And time is telling now. I mean, honestly, how hard? I mean, I don't think that Bernie Sanders would have done this. And I'm not holding him up as some, you know, hero in the sky. But, you know, going over to this Haiti thing, the difference in watching how we treat people coming from South America and the people coming up from Haiti. I mean, it was so swift and harsh, the punishment. It was like a big white slap in the face. You're going to get the hell out of here, and you're going to get out tomorrow, and we're going to pay for you if we have to get out of here. We don't even talk. We won't even talk about what it's going to cost to take you back to where you came from. That's how fast the decision was made. And I agree with you that I don't even think I see them as refugees. I don't see them as migrants. I see them as refugees. Their country, very much due to a lot of the ways that we live our lives, is suffering from global warming. And we're going to see this more and more, these catastrophic events. But of course, it has a lot to do with our manipulating their government, too. So things are completely unstable. I think you said there were two houses built there, you know, a total of two houses built after the millions of dollars.
Two houses.
Right.
With
two
the wonderful
built.
Ex-president
right.
Clinton.
Right. After billions of dollars are being raised.
Wife.
Right. So after billions of dollars being raised and people, you know, parked outside, living on mountains, having to use, you know, streams and having no indoor plumbing. And this has been going on for years. And then the second one too happens. And the third one happens with the president. And we don't have any empathy for these people. We don't have any sympathy. What happened to all the empathy and sympathy that we had for, you know, the people that were coming up from South America? I mean, we have a huge, huge Mexican and South American population here in the United States, and almost many, many of them are not here legally. But we all talk about tolerance and finding a way out of this and trying to get something together so they can stay here and continue to live here. And then you have these people that are really, really suffering. And I just thought of I thought to myself when I watched it, man, slavery just never left. Just that harshness, that bitter cruelness never left this country. It didn't leave. Why is it we just got right back in there? Like there's tolerance for everybody else, but man, you come in and your skin is black, hole. We got something for you. And it's like there's the exit and you get out. So I have to say that your show for me was so important yesterday that you put it out there clearly and eloquently. I think it's something that has to be heard. And I hope that African-American people are watching this carefully and understanding that there's a signal here. There's something very important under the surface here about another betrayal. And, you know, I feel heartbroken watching it. I wish maybe there is something I can do. I don't know. I mean, I will call my senator. I'm even going to call Bernie, too. But you know, and you know what else? I see Carolyn Maloney at the hairdresser, so I'll let her know. But you know, it is really heartbreaking. And I guess I just wanted to say, as an American, I feel very, I feel like I can't open my mouth up about anything. I can't open my mouth up about to conservatives, and I can't open it up to liberals. On both sides, I'm getting my head chopped off, and my world here in the United States feels like it's getting smaller and smaller. More restrained, the noose around my neck feels tighter and tighter, and it's very uncomfortable. And the worst and most heartbreaking part for me is watching many of my so-called liberal and progressive brothers and sisters that are, you know, leading the way here. I mean, even the first woman that called said what a heartbreak it was that we weren't giving the people from Haiti vaccines. I would say if they want the vaccines, they should be definitely allowed to take the vaccines. But, you know, maybe at the end of the day, they're the smart ones for not getting it. We won't know. But, you know, time will tell what's going to happen with these vaccines. And again, you know, I'm a better safe than sorry person. So for me, for me personally, it's better to be safe than sorry. And I do all the protocols instead. That's my feeling.
Bart, thank you very much. A very eloquent presentation today, Gwen. I paid attention, rapt attention. Thank you so much. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice. I'm going to stick to your question. I'll pick the one that was, are you a part of America or are you apart from America? Here's the way I look at it. When the country was going through the revolution, it went from a revolution from the monarchy in England, and the intention wasn't all this talk of liberty and justice for all. It was for the ruling group, the most powerful group, what we call the ruling class today, to substitute themselves for the monarchy that they got, they cast away. So as the way I feel, I am part of the country, America, yes. However, we still have the same relationship where the ruling class, the people who run things and own the place, lock, stock, and barrel, and that includes all the levers of government, especially the Congress. We have the same relationship of a caste system that has a various castes, and the people do not run the place. The place is run by the oligarchs, the rich and powerful, and that's where it is. And I consider myself one of the masses of the people. And the people do not run things. The whole place is run in the interests of those at the very top. And as I said before, they own it lock, stock, and barrel. If they did not own it and the whole place was functioning in the interests of people, we wouldn't have poor people. We wouldn't have homeless people. We would have people with the jobs, and we had would have an excellent quality of life, and we wouldn't have a system of divide and conquer called white supremacy racism, where the rulers divide people up any way they can to maintain power. So I'm a part of the country, but I'm aware that we did not run it. The woes at the top run it. And as I've said many times, the people have no party whatsoever.
If you were face to face with Joe Biden right now, what would you say to him directly?
Well, I would call him out for who he really is. And I would tell him that I'm going to work hard to take away those people who are have supported him for what reason, because they have nowhere to go. But being that even we have nowhere to go, so in spite of that, we can pull out. So, you know, that's why I don't vote for anything like that for someone like Joe Biden. And even though I know that there are no parties available, only two viable groups in this uniparty, I will not vote for any of them. So I think people have to get to that point, and that may give him a wake-up call that he can't go with the okey-doke and won't be business as usual, and it usually is business as usual for most people. They vote for the better of the two evils, and that's it. So we got to stop voting for the better of two evils.
What should these terribly suffering people under the bridge, what should they know is happening not in Congress, but among the people here?
Well, I think that those people and my heart goes out to them should understand how this place works and understand what is happening here. This is not that wonderful for the masses of people, but the point is that they are living in a place that is considered part of the American Empire, and the people who rule, they don't really care that much about the people who live here, and they certainly don't care about those people living under the bridge. The ruling class cares about one thing, themselves and their wealth, and accumulating more wealth at the expense of all the people that live here. And people have to understand that, and they don't understand that because those who rule control all information, schools, colleges, newspapers, and all kinds of radio and television, and they have the people fooled about so many things. I try quite a lot to talk to people, and it's so very difficult because I find that the power of that small ruling class to fool people is brilliant. I mean, they are fantastic acolytes of Edward Bernay, and they are so good at it that they can manipulate
Public relations
very easily.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Brother David, for calling in today. A very sobering presentation today.
Thank
Ed
you.
From Queens, you're on the air, and you probably will be the last one because we'll give you the time. It's more time than you normally have, but it makes sense to just use all of that time up with one presentation.
Thank you, Eutrice. I appreciate that. You asked a question of the prior caller. What should those 15,000 human beings under the bridge should be feeling or thinking about the people in this country? And I'm going to tell you what they should be feeling and thinking. If those 15,000 people were Armenians, if those 15,000 people were Chinese or Asian or Asian or some other ethno or ethnic descent, they know what they would be thinking because the people in this country would be in uproars. And shame on the African American diaspora in this country. We should be filling the streets. I was out there in front of the UN last night. Limited amount of people. We should be in the streets. This has happened to the Haitian people from the 1980s when my parents were out there protesting, and they were doing that too. They were allowing the Cubans in, and they were doing the same thing with the camps in Miami and in Florida. This is nothing new, but this is the apathy of this country, and this is the apathy of the black people in this country. They are our own, whether you like it or not. African diaspora, that's my people. And just every African American community should be in outrage in the streets, hollering and screaming at these people. How dare you deport these human beings back to a desperate condition? There are people underneath that bridge, men, women, children, that if they go back to Haiti, they will die. And if he has the unmitigated gall to get in front of the UN and speak that garbage that he was speaking this morning, he should be out. And we should be out in the streets. We should be protesting. We should be forcing this government to do what it's supposed to do, because any other ethnic group would be doing it. Forget about the ruling class. Forget about the power elite. Any other ethnic group would be doing it. Jewish, Asian, Armenian, Lithuanian, whatever you want to call them. Any other ethnic group would be out there fighting for their people, and we're not. Shame on us.
What do you think is at the root of that level of self-hate.
It's not self-hate. It's apathy and ignorance. It's apathy of the American condition. The American condition of everything is going. I look towards my leaders. I look towards the heroes to take charge of what I'm supposed to take charge of. I'm apathetic, and it's ignorance. It's ignorance about knowing the African condition in this world. It's ignorance about knowing who your people are. It's ignorance about knowing how to build a community, how to organize, and how to stand. And the one thing that the ruling elites of this country has done greatly is to diverse the people of this country. You've got Amos Wilson said it best. Your race, your culture, that's your money. That's your heritage. That's your primary focus. And we don't have that. We're petty.
What should be done right now in light of President Biden's claim today at the United Nations that he will relentlessly pursue diplomacy?
The streets should be full of outraged people. The streets should be full of outraged people. We should be in front of the UN. We should be out on a great lawn. We should be everywhere that this government projects itself as some type of moral authority. We should be out there saying, shame on you. How dare you call yourself moral authority when you send these people back to die? And that's the only solution you can come up with. We can, like someone said earlier on the show, we can marshal airplanes to pull out Afghanistan. We can marshal freedom flotillas to pull people out of Cuba, but we can't. Do you know how these people got to that bridge? They traveled from Haiti across Central America, across a jungle. Now, a lot of them died in passage through the jungle, spending thousands of dollars, word of mouth, to get to this bridge because it was supposed to be a repulse. It was supposed to be a release from the hell that they were going through. And to get to that point and to have this go, oh, we're going to send them right back. Like I said, but such as it is, I mean, it's sad, but it's a shame on the black people in this country. Shame.
I agree with you there. Wholeheartedly, I agree with you on that point. It is disgraceful what the black community is not doing. It's disgraceful.
And we should be doing it.
We hope, of course. We always hope that things would change, but so far it doesn't look like it. Thanks so much, yes. Ed, for your comments today. Thank you all for contributing. And we are going to continue this conversation because it is important. It is important. Thank you all for today. Let's talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.